How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, come on. So, sometimes it's all about the small things. And the Sabres make it official, by the way. Why am I joking about all the small things here? Elliot Friedman had a pretty tough spot for a typo. It turns out Peyton Krebs, the deal is 4 years, $4.5 million, not $3.5 million per season. So it is a whole $1 million more per year on the cap hit there. But again, the Sabres also officially announcing it. So their business with anything they need to take care of is done. And the Sabres, again, announcing that today. Krebs up and down the lineup. He ended up with personal bests in goals, assists, career high season for him. I am going to wonder where, if there is no trade protections, anything like that. But Krebs now locked up until the 2029-2030 season. All right. I find that interesting. That's a tough place, though, to have a typo. That's unfortunate. But Krebs signed. That means you've got your 15th forward. And now you go ahead and you get through in there and figure out what they have to do from there. Is there too much of a logjam at forward? Is there somebody that you want to jettison out? Is there a certain player that you want to make sure does not get scratched among the bottom six? There's a lot of questions for that. 803-0550 is the number to call. But the Sabres announcing it now, Peyton Krebs, 4 years, $4.5 million. Not the previously reported 3.5. That's a tough typo to have there from one Elliot Friedman. He said post-updated 4x4.5. Bad typo. Bruh. What are we doing? Oh, man. Well, it happens to the best of us. And, I mean, that was Elliot Friedman. Guy who is as dialed in as everyone can be. And I do wonder with Krebs now back in the fold, 15 contracts at forward. And anyone that puts lines together, I encourage you to do the exercise. Somebody's going to be left out of there that you're going to have a problem with being out of the lineup. Your automatic is probably what? Like Danforth is scratched? Yep, that's an easy one. And he'll be one of the depth forwards. But from there, it gets trickier. By the way, the Sabres, with that contract announced, $4.1 million left on the cap this year for the offseason. They might be done. They might be done. And that's kind of just how it goes. Kozak would be your other easy scratch, by the way. But then, after that, who do you scratch? Well, Peyton Krebs just got 4.5 per season. Jason Zucker's making 4.75 for the last season. Sam Carrick is a fourth line center, but so can be Peyton Krebs. Ryan McLeod making $5 million a year. It is one of those things where it is going to be a mystery to find out what they do at forward. How are they going to get through everything here? And what can be done about the logjam? Does Kulik start in Rochester again after he looked like a player that had graduated to full-time in the NHL? Or does he in training camp make that conversation difficult? It's already a difficult conversation to have. Who are the three forwards that you scratch on a nightly basis? And with Krebs just getting now a $4.5 million per season contract, you want to justify having him in. For a player that played on the first line for the final third of the season at minimum, and the majority of the postseason. A guy who, much like Jack Quinn, the year he signs his bridge deal, had a career high close to Quinn's at time of signing. It'll be interesting to see what they do with Krebs, as well as the rest of the forward core. It is a logjam. It's going to be interesting. It also kind of makes people want the trade for Hellebuck to happen because now it solves a different problem. But if the Sabres are done this offseason, again, $4.1 million left in cap space for this year. If they're done, how do you feel about it? 803-0550 is the number to call. I'm starting to wonder if they are done. I'm starting to wonder if they unload one of the older forwards like a McLeod or a Zucker for a pick, and that be the end of it. Because that might be the easier fix. They don't have the cap space to do much else. Again, players being dealt within for Hellebuck would be another way to get the logjam taken care of. But I have my doubts at this point. Rumors this, rumors that. Until there's an actual move made on Hellebuck, I'm no longer believing any of it. I'm definitely going to go ahead and think it's pretty much over. And if it's over, it's a good roster. It still is. It's a deep roster, as a matter of fact. It's a roster that can survive injuries. And with the Sabres, their depth is one of their greatest strengths. You can get scoring up and down the lineup. It's one of the more valuable things that they can do is lock these players up long term. And it kind of establishes the second group. You identify a core, and then you identify the second group. You identify the depth that you need or feel that you need in order to keep being dangerous in the postseasons. And they've identified Krebs as one of those guys. We'll see what happens with Quinn next year. Because if he keeps putting up point production, that's going to be hard to ignore. And he would get a significant raise from the 3.375 he's making next year. But who becomes the 13th forward on this team? That is a question that is going to have a lot of different answers from person to person. And it's going to be interesting to think about what can be done from them from there. I really wonder if this is what they're going to go forward with. And then you have difficult decisions. It's a good roster if that's the case. I'm overall happy with their offseason. Do I think 4.5 for Krebs might have been a little pricey? Yeah, a little bit. But that's the market these days. That's kind of how it goes. But whoever you ask, the answer is going to be different. For the 13th forward. It's always going to be different. But if they're done this season, I don't hate it. If they're done, I'm kind of okay with it. Because the cap space is telling me, well, they're done. It's easy to move money around for a Hellebuck trade. But that's probably the only thing they have left. If it is going to happen, it's the only thing they have left. There's not enough cap space to do anything else. They also just might not. They just might not. And I know that's probably a little weak to say that this might be the roster. But I'm perfectly fine with it. So the Sabres decided to make a little news on something. I did want to switch over to football a little bit here. And what has been going on with the ESPN rankings and anything like that. Joe, did you have anything else left on the Sabres or Krebs here?
No, just that, you know, I love Elliot Friedman and everything he does, but let's make sure to put the right, you know. I'll fat finger a button here and there. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I'll slip onto the three or four.
The three is totally next to the four. I totally understand.
Totally get it. Imagine if it was the five. We would have all been panicking, right? So,
five,
I mean,
and a half.
Could have been a lot worse. Four and a half's fine. I don't know. I haven't had enough time to like really sit and think about it. I'll think about it for later, but I'm good to move into football if you would like.
So, Josh Allen is named the top quarterback.
As he should
according
be.
To executives, coaches, and scouts across the league. There's a panel of them that ESPN asked to rank the top 10 of every position. And it is kind of funny that for some reason in these rankings, Pat Mahomes, somebody had ninth. Another person had Lamar Jackson unranked in the top 10.
I think that's a little egregious. I do understand Patrick Mahomes maybe not being nine, but being less than two.
Well, the thing is that he apparently won the first place votes. It was the middle. It's the, if he's not in first, where is he going
well,
in the variance that Allen
that's
is.
That's people voting for what they've seen the last 3 years. This is for this season, is it not? Don't they do this every year?
Yes.
So this is projected for what you're looking at this season and what happened last year. I know Mahomes got injured, but even before that, were the Chiefs going to make the playoffs? That was the whole story, right? And he was quarterbacking that team. So hopefully he can come back and do better. But if you're basing your entire list off of 23, 24, 25, 20, like if you're doing cumulative, then I don't know how, like, I don't get it. That's what's frustrating to me. But I think overall it's pretty accurate. But I think there's a couple things I'll change. But I'll let you get into it, and then we can figure that.
No, it makes sense though to think about these things. But Allen, it's more or less, according to these people, his floor is a lot higher. It seems like the variance is not there with him where it is with other quarterbacks. People cannot take Josh Allen out of their top five. And it sounds like some of them have managed to take Mahomes, or at least one of them has taken Mahomes out of a top five, or Lamar Jackson out of that top five. And it seems like that's kind of the argument now. Josh Allen is hard to take out of people's top five.
Well, when it's NFL executives and whatever, who else, right?
It's coaches. NFL executives, scouts, and coaches.
What? Here's the number one thing. A team who's playing the Buffalo Bills or playing any quarterback in the NFL, what one are they most fearful of playing?
It seems to be Allen.
Who's going to, A, truck your defenders, B, fly over the top of them, C, throw a 90-yard bomb, or D, I don't know, scramble? Do something. He's
put a juke on him like you should have bison.
Exactly. He's yeah. Exactly. Ocho Cinco out here calling that out. I don't know. I think if you're asking these people who you're most scared to play against, this list stacks up pretty well right now. And I'll say Drake May being at eight is more of we don't want to put him way too high, way too early kind of a situation.
Because like they did with Jaden Daniels
yes,
in this,
and he totally. I mean, he had an injury and all that. Don't get me wrong, right? But Drake May's got to have one more year, I feel like, of what he did last year. Because right now, the schedule allegations are loud from last season.
Right.
So, if they do what they did again and they make their way to a championship, that could be one thing. And he might really catapult up the top. But I don't know. I just, anyone leaving Lamar Jackson off the list is questionable to me. I think that's a little ridiculous. I know he... Availability is the big thing with him because he's injured frequently. Like we had Snoop Huntley make a Pro Bowl one yep. season in Baltimore. So I get people's whatever with him, but he's one of the better dual threat quarterbacks in the league. He's not going to truck guys like Josh Allen, but he will juke you.
He will put a juke on you. And the thing is that Lamar Jackson is incredibly talented. One of the executives under Jackson on this, by the mm-hmm. way, said, I wonder how much he's going to keep running as he's hitting 30.
That's a good question.
He's still probably fast, but probably not at his peak, so they could start to manufacture runs in other ways. I don't know if his athleticism is going to really drop off.
He hasn't. I know he's been injured. He's not taking hits, though, like crazy, where he's going to get injured or anything like that, right?
But it's also how elite he is while moving.
Yeah. He's got motion, as they say.
And I don't think that there's something that he will take out of his game because it is so good and it is a crucial part of his game.
Mm-hmm.
The creativity, the ability, the speed.
Well, it's something that's not taught. He has an innate ability to avoid contact and all of that and move around on the field. So
the creativity.
It's not necessarily about his speed all around. It's more about agility, versatility, stuff like that, you know?
And that will decline a lot less sharply than speed would.
Yes.
For example. So I don't think it's going to be something that stops. You guys were talking about it earlier of like Jackson, though, and you said it too just now, Jackson does miss games. He's missed four of them at least.
For the last, what, four seasons? Three seasons?
Three of the past 5 years.
Three of the past 5 years, yeah.
Not a surprise. Baltimore's missed the playoffs multiple times.
Uh-huh.
With him at quarterback. Because he misses games.
Right. Would that not apply to Joe Burrow, though, too? At number four? Because he misses a ton with injury. Yes, when he plays like an MVP on a rough Bengals team the past couple of years. But he's started the season with injuries a couple times. To the point where Joe Flacco revives his career in Cincinnati, if I'm not mistaken, right? Or was that after? No, it was Cleveland first and then Cincinnati.
Yes, but he still also...
He does well.
He does well enough that when Burrow comes back, Cincinnati's not out of the picture.
No, there was a chance for them.
The Bengals do storm back a little bit. But a couple years ago, it's Jake Browning that holds serve.
That's Burrow, who I'm thinking of. Because that was the year that Joe Flacco was in Cleveland that year.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
But then Flacco keeps the season alive the next year, and Burrow almost storms back and gets them a playoff spot.
Yeah, it was close. Especially in that AFC North, it was just a mid-off at that point.
Yes. So Burrow has a lot of durability concerns as well. But I also think that it's how the durability concerns show up with him versus Jackson that is really how they're treated a little differently. Burrow gets rocked from the pocket a lot. Jackson, with Baltimore at least, has a better offensive line. And also, Jackson's injuries seem to be more freak like in nature, almost relatively not as connected.
Yeah, a little off the beaten path injury wise. It's not there's not really a correlation from what he's doing on the field.
Like sometimes he ends up
have like a bowel obstruction every third quarter though. So I mean that does happen.
Yeah, it seems like there's something immune system wise that sometimes will keep him out of a game. Like it's unfortunate stuff that happens with Jackson.
Yeah.
Whereas with Burrow getting beaten to a pulp on the turf, you see, oh, yeah, that's probably why it's happening.
Right, sure. There's a correlation.
There's a correlation here.
Yeah.
With Jackson, some of them can't even be explained properly, and that's maybe where there might be a difference in explanations there. But honestly, I think I'd rather take the unlucky one than the...
Than the one with the correlation, sure.
The one where I can connect very easily of, no, this is happening because he's getting taken down and getting hit a lot.
Well, I know this might be a little bit of a hot take, but there's more upside to Lamar Jackson than Joe Burrow.
There's a lot more of that. I don't think that's hot at all.
Okay.
I think that, as a matter of fact, if someone said the opposite, that's where it gets goofy. It just, with how everything goes within the middle of the pack, though, I do like that Dak Prescott's getting a little bit of flowers.
Okay, yeah. I was going to ask you about 6 through 10 now, just kind of with Prescott especially, because I feel like people might have put him where Lamar is, and then that's where I feel like there might be some variability there. Like, Dak could definitely be top 5.
So that's the thing about Prescott, is he is, at his best, fantastic.
Is it not injuries for him, too?
Injuries are a concern. He also has kind of been hit with the turnover pension every now and then.
Yeah. Happens to the best of them.
Allen's cut down on it from recent years.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact. Just except in, the last game of the season. Notwithstanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a weird time machine jump back there.
That was not the time for a younger Josh Allen right there. That was unfortunate. But... yeah, Prescott is very consistent. And I think part of the problem, though, is where he plays in terms of, reputation. Like, he plays in Dallas, who doesn't really seem to value him as much as they should. It seems like a lot of things with Dallas and how they treat him is, yeah, he's good enough. He's good enough to get us where we want to go. And yet, because of the Cowboys and how they operate, he gets hit with that reputation of how the Cowboys are. It's a victim of circumstance for him. I've got a hot take for you. Justin Herbert's too high.
Ooh, okay. I don't know if I'm going to agree with you on that. Where does he go?
I think he's closer to 10. I would absolutely put Caleb Williams or Jared Goff ahead of Justin Herbert.
Yeah.
I've got a quarterback that does not prove anything to me on a relatively consistent basis.
Yeah, but also, I mean, how much is that Joe Alt and his entire offensive line last season was diminished entirely? Had Greg Roman calling plays the year before that. You have a coaching change. Like, there's just been a lot with him, but I feel like innate talent-wise, I have him pretty much where he's at.
Innate talent-wise is there. He also has still yet to really achieve anything with it. And I'm not even talking on the team side of things. I'm also talking about him in particular. Like, he'll put up some flashy numbers in a season, and then he collapses.
Mm-hmm.
And he never gets it done. He's 28, by the way.
I know, yeah.
Like, it's kind of catching up now.
This is the year. With McDaniel as the offensive coordinator, you see if they marry well, if you will. And where it goes from here, I got to say, with him, I don't know why. A little bit of a soft spot for Justin Herbert. I genuinely think he's one of the better quarterbacks in the league. He's had the best situation.
By the way, you did the thing on accident. You said if McDaniel and him can gel well. We know Herbert as if man.
Well, yeah.
And that is the problem. If you don't get to stepping up in the moment, you get hit with that tag.
I mean, can we say Josh Allen's almost if man? Because if they get to a Super Bowl has been for the past 7 years almost.
It's more of if the defense can stop hemorrhaging points.
Or if Josh Allen didn't turn over the ball and give 3 points away at halftime, those 3 points actually change the way that game pans out?
I think so, but also to a lesser degree.
Yeah.
Because Allen has proven in the moments to step up, even with turning the ball over 4 times.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
He gets them to where they're in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at that moment, he'd only turn it over 3 times to get to overtime, but I digress.
Yeah, right, right.
The thing about it is,
I'm just trying to play devil's advocate. Yeah. I'm not trying to go at Josh Allen. That's all.
But that's the thing. Josh Allen turned the football over 4 times, and it's a 3-point loss in overtime. Justin Herbert turns the ball over 4 times, and he's dead in the water against the Texans.
Yeah.
The season where he throws only 3 interceptions in the season and then throws more in the wild card game. Sorry, man. You also are the conductor of the collapse against the Jaguars that gives Trevor Lawrence a chance to hit the spotlight.
Wasn't his hand broken last year or something like that, Herbert?
That's not even last year. Last year I can see is the kind of excuse year where he doesn't have both starting tackles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the reflection of his entire career right now. He does not step up to the moment.
Right. Is this list not, as I said in the beginning, though, it's not 24, 25, 20. It's not 23, 24. This is really last season into this season. What do you project these guys to be? Like, what are you thinking? So that's where I see Herbert as 7. Because you saw throughout the regular season last year, yes, in the playoffs, I get it. I get what you're saying. I'm not trying to discount that. But he played very well for the situation he had with both offensive tackles being out. And he was getting obliterated throughout the season. Still had very few turnovers in the regular season. Like, I don't know. If we're really doing this for last season and this year, if we're not going to be the executives in whatever, the ESPN people thinking, Patrick Mahomes should be number 1 because of the Super Bowls he's won. Herbert should, I think, be number 7. I think he should be where he's at.
Yeah.
You know?
I still think there are... Jared Goff doesn't get enough love, I think. Goff is a player that...
Is he not just a system quarterback, though? Because look at what happened as soon as you lose Ben Johnson. That immediately stifled back. That was not Jared Goff from 2 seasons ago or a season ago. If we're going off of last year where Ben Johnson's no longer with that team, I think he's there. And then Caleb Williams with Ben Johnson, blasts up into the top 10 from where he was.
I do wonder if some of it's also the fact that he took a lot of sacks last year.
Yeah. Josh Allen got sacked what? How many times? 40 times?
Goff was right behind him, 38.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's something like that where you just need to get to protecting him a little better. But Goff has also shown to be the guy in the moments every now and then. It's kind of where I would favor him over Herbert, because you said that he might be a system guy, but he also was eschewed out of two different systems. Correct. He also thrived in multiple systems now too.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not just that he's a systems quarterback. He is good enough to be in different systems and thrive anyway.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I just look at the systems he was in and what happens when you replace him in L.A. Matt Stafford wins a Super Bowl, right?
Right.
He's
upgradable.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, like, Herbert, he's supposed to be the upper echelon. He's not upgradable necessarily, where Jared Goff is considered upgradable in a sense.
And I just would argue that maybe Herbert is upgradable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the physical talent. It's the acumen. It's the poise. There's other things to him that I would say Goff is better at. The athleticism, Herbert's got him beat. Goff's the last statue quarterback with Stafford. Those two
Isn't
are the last.
Isn't Burrow kind of that? He's not Burrow really all that athletic.
Burrow can manipulate a pocket.
Mm-hmm.
The other two can't. Goff is the last true statue quarterback because Stafford will retire before him. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe Goff retires early. Who knows? But yeah, this is where... But the fact that I can argue with Jared Goff over Justin Herbert kind of tells you enough about Herbert right now anyway. 803-0550 is the number to call if you want to jump in on this sort of thing. Is Josh Allen overrated? No.
He was voted the most overrated player a couple years ago, and then he won MVP, so I don't know.
Yeah, maybe we do it again, okay? Maybe we just go ahead and say it on purpose just so that he can win an MVP again. Maybe that's how we do it, right? Jinxing it. But if you want to get in, this is the North Town Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Dan Orlovsky talking about really the fluidity of the Bills' identity over the last couple of years with Joe Brady as the offensive coordinator. And what will they be this time? This is the North Town Automotive Extra Point Show. Derek Kramer. Joe Kelly is here as well. Real quick, just to follow up on the Peyton Krebs contract, we have the last bit of news here. Looks like there is going to be a limited no-trade clause in the last two seasons of the deal. It would be a seven-team no-trade clause in 28-29 and 29-30. So, there we go. I was wondering what the trade protection would be because that's the cost to do business these days. And it looks like, okay, it's not through the full contract. Perfectly fine with that. I'm okay with the last 2 years of that having seven-team no trade clause, that's fine. That's fine. I'm perfectly fine with that. So to the Bills. The ESPN rankings, they always seem to fascinate me a little bit. Because, you know, you are asking the execs, the coaches, the scouts of who they like for the next year, everything like that. It is supposed to be a little bit of a projection. But the Bills are, for a constant threat, for being such a constant Super Bowl threat, they're also a team that does not have a lot of these top 10 players. They're a team that does not seem to have a lot of high-end talent. And the votes make sense accordingly for that. Allen, obviously ranking number one at quarterback, is kind of why you could see the Bills always just kind of being around and threatening, because Allen is here. He's seen as one of the best players in the league at the league's most important position. Helping him out, though, is James Cook. Cook ranked seventh, amongst running backs after winning the rushing title last year. But I couldn't really give you an argument of the players ahead of him. I kind of looked at most of that list and went, yeah, that's fair. It's Barkley, McCaffrey, Henry, Robinson, Gibbs, and I do forget the other one. but I'm not worrying about that. But I think if James Cook does this again, he'll land in the top five. But that's the end of the list of players in the top 10 on these rankings, according to coaches, executives, and scouts within the NFL. Dalton Kincaid makes the honorable mentions, so he's kind of like in that top 15 grouping. And that's it. Deion Dawkins and Spencer Brown receive votes. Connor McGovern receives votes. Ed Oliver also receives votes. And that's it. There's nothing else here. The Bills are kind of seen as Josh Allen, James Cook, and a bunch of dudes. There's some good dudes there, but the elite talent really isn't there outside of two players. The series will wrap up with linebacker, wide receiver, and safety. And let's be real here, everyone. I don't think that there's going to be any more top 10 players from the Bills on those lists. Linebacker, I don't think they're going to be getting anything at all. The drop-off that Terrell Bernard had was rough and unfortunate. Wide receiver? Well, that's a... Hang on, I'll do that one last. Safety? Cole Bishop might receive votes. He might sneak into honorable mentions. I don't think that Cole Bishop is a top 10 safety in the NFL yet, though. And I think that's a very fair projection to make. Wide receiver. I heard you laugh through the glass on that one,
Joe. I did. I liked. I'll do that one later.
I'll do that one last.
I know how you feel about that.
No. It's also, we talk ad nauseum about the position here. Do you think any of them are going to make a top 10 list, let alone honorable mention?
Probably not.
DJ Moore is the only one that's going to threaten to, like, maybe get some votes.
But that's a maybe. Like, that's, you know.
I know.
And that's nothing against him.
It's just nothing against him.
The talent in the NFL is crazy.
The talent in the NFL is crazy, especially at that position. So it might be hard for DJ Moore, coming off of a down season statistically, to end up on that list.
Right.
That's unfortunate. But it kind of shows the overall picture of the Bills, does it not? They're Josh Allen, James Cook now as a co-star, and a decent collection of talent otherwise.
Yeah, it's just Batman and Robin.
But it's nothing elite.
Yeah.
I was surprised Connor McGovern didn't get it.
Yeah, you know, I thought I would be, but I'm kind of not. I kind of look around and I'm like, he's very good at what he does, but I think that list is pretty prominent.
And yet,
it'd be tough to break into.
On the same website, and this is something that fascinated me, we're finally getting to this, Joe.
Okay.
After 5 days of holding on to this thing on the website.
Yeah.
Mike Clay, Aaron Schatz, Seth Walder all cooperated for a ranking of the overall rosters.
Okay.
And the Bills, despite having only two top 10 players on it from the other list that's being compiled, the overall projected starters of the Buffalo Bills, they rank fourth in the entire league.
Yep.
Behind Seattle, Super Bowl winners, Philadelphia, kind of doy.
Yeah.
And the Rams, also doy.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny, all of that honorable mention and not even just
receiving votes, or straight up just not having players on them like corner.
Yeah. Are the fourth highest ranked starting offense, starting position player, or whatever. Like
Starters
in the
starting
NFL.
Starting 22.
Yeah. And you got to think, right? That's got to just be Josh Allen and James Cook pulling all that weight to do that, right?
It is.
Because of how elite they are, they truly are. I know Cook was seventh, but like the number one best quarterback who's going to do everything in his power to win a game by himself. It's got to be pulling all the weight there.
You have one of the best players in the league in one of the most important positions, or the most important position, excuse me. And it seems to always help. It's why, when you and I talked about this with Owen on Friday, it's why I kind of feel arrogant about the floor that the Buffalo Bills have. Joe Brady as a head coach would have to be an unmitigated disaster in order for this to not work. In order for the Bills to not make the playoffs, in order for the Bills to not get to 10 wins. Because Allen is so dynamic, and then you also now have James Cook. So offensively, it is kind of dangerous how you're still able to operate despite our thoughts and feelings about a certain position. The defense being one of the biggest question marks, of course, in a lot of different ways. We usually had our questions about the defense, but it was never in the regular season. Our questions about the defense always were, let's wait till January to see what happens here. And then oftentimes it's been disaster. But this article from Clay, Schatz, and Walter also mentions two things. The X factor for 2026, defensive coordinator Jim Leonard. The offense gets to keep the consistency, but now, what's going to happen with the defense? How are the players going to react to the scheme? And on here is also the biggest weakness. And it seems like the little excerpt here from Mike Clay is off-ball linebacker. Because of the fact that Bernard has battled injuries, he's also battled some inconsistencies. And now it's also going to be who starts next to him, though. Is it going to be Dorian Williams? Is it going to be Caleb Ealarms-Orr? That's where things are going to get a little interesting and mystifying to me, is if the linebackers aren't up to snuff, again, last year was not a good year for them. Now what are you going to do? Are you going to be, again, super susceptible to the run like you were last year and throughout a majority of the McDermott era? Because the Bills did kind of figure something out, at least within the regular season, which is we're going to keep everything in front of us. You're not going to beat us over the top, and you will have your way a little bit between the 20s. But once you run out of real estate, that's where we're going to get you. The other thing was is that the defense was so consistently able to get turnovers. And last year was the first year that they really don't get that done. Under Sean McDermott, the Bills were always in the top 10 defensively in creating turnovers. And now all of a sudden, when the well dried up, the defense was, quite frankly, bad at times. Not just not up to par, straight up bad. And you needed the offense to help bail you out sometimes. But it's also fascinating to know there's a team that doesn't have a whole lot of elite talent and yet still seen as so favorable up and down its depth chart. And yet we're all still always kind of looking for, like, can Brandon Bean hit another home run somewhere? It would actually be really nice.
It would be.
It would be really nice.
Because when was the last home run? Von Miller? And that was that even now considered one? Maybe at the time it was, but now it's not.
I might say James Cook.
James Cook, yes.
That's
how many years ago now?
List.
Yeah.
And Miller only gets diminished because of the bad luck that happens with him.
Right, and it was all injury, unfortunately. Like, and you're not going to foresee that. Because when he first got here, it was, oh man, are we going to have something special
all right,
here?
So on timeline basis, it would be James Cook. Because they signed Miller before they draft Cook that same year.
Yep.
So James Cook's the last home run. That's also still way too long ago.
Aren't you supposed to, hit a home run kind of? I don't mean like a Von Miller, like big swing, whatever. But like in the draft, it'd be nice if you could hit here and there a little more frequently.
Little more frequently. That's kind of what you want at this point. Because, ready? Let's look at the Detroit Lions, who are sixth. Mm-hmm. Overall on their roster, right? Jared Goff is a top 10 player on a position group, right?
Yep.
We just talked about that. Jahmyr Gibbs was number two on the running backs. I would imagine Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to be on the wide receivers list. Incredibly talented.
Mm-hmm.
Penei Sewell was one of the top 10 linemen. Sam Laporta on the tight ends.
Yep.
That's just on the offensive side. Aiden Hutchinson's over there on the defense. Kirby Joseph, Brian Branch are fantastic safeties that I'd imagine one of them hits the top 10 on that list. In particular, Joseph. And yet, the Bills have a better overall roster?
Right.
It's fascinating to me.
It's subjective, too. That's the thing.
It's like, also between the opinions of two different sets of people as well.
Yeah.
But the overall premise is still fascinating to me. How do the Bills end up as, like, still so widely respected? I think it's because of the fact that they landed number one somewhere else, too. And it's why I'm not scared of their floor. Their floor is where Josh Allen is. And that, Joe, can be said with relative confidence, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the durability concerns with Burrow and Jackson in the last segment.
Yeah, Allen hasn't missed a game.
Allen hasn't missed a game. The Bills' fate goes where Josh Allen goes. If he's on the field, they're winning football games. Point blank, period. And even in the playoffs, their fate goes where Josh Allen goes. And oftentimes it has led to Josh Allen will keep getting you there. And then something weird has happened otherwise. But he'll keep you around. Even at his worst, turning the ball over four times in a playoff game. The fact that it was even a game is also one of the strangest phenomenon about the Buffalo Bills and Allen in particular. Take a timeout. Wrap things up here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show coming up next year on WGR.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic. It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we don't have a lot of time here. So, David in North Carolina, we got to get this point in quick, all right? Ready? You're on the line.
Hey guys, I appreciate you taking my call. I got two quick things. One, you talk about home runs. I'm really holding out a lot of hope that Michael Hoyt can be that next home run for him based on the seven quarters that he played last year.
I like that.
A lot of high hopes there. Also, just real quick, I just have to say, counter to that, I just think Brandon Bean has really cared more about his job security than actually winning a Super Bowl, because he stays just good enough every year to not be able to get fired, but yet doesn't seem to do the things necessary that the Eagles, the Rams, some other teams do to bring in those high-end players that you guys are talking about. So appreciate you taking my call. Listen,
Dave, I appreciate the understanding the assignment there too. Very good job getting those points in pretty quick here, because I only got a minute. But I like the Hoyt point. I think that one is one that a lot of people can hold out hope for. That is a certified dog. And if we've learned anything about players that got that dog in them in Buffalo, we love that. Benson became the superstar here overnight in that way. Peyton Krebs, speaking of dog, getting a contract extension. Michael Hoyt, dog. The other part there with Bean, I like that you say that, like, it's the big moves, the risky moves that the Eagles or the Rams, they have a tendency to do those more. And they are punchier and more willing to take those risks. That's probably the perfect way to put it about Brandon Bean. I don't know if it's like job security versus winning a Super Bowl more than it is about, like, you know, he seems to not make the risky moves as frequently as some of the other general managers that we've seen enter their teams into the spotlight almost by force. And I think that's pretty fun. That'll do it for us here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Derek Kramer here with you. Zach will be back tomorrow. The duo back whole, at least for a little bit. And we'll worry about that later. Welcome back for Zach tomorrow. Sabres Live coming up next. Pat Malacaro going to be joining Marty and Duffer. We love ourselves a good Pat Malacaro. That's coming up next here on WGR.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.